I want to pose a question. What if God was one of us? A song with that question addressed that question, hitting the airways in 1995. I won't sing you the chorus, but I will read it. It says, "What if God was one of us, just a slob like one of us, just a stranger on a bus trying to make his way back home?" The glorious thing about Christmas is that this song is true. It's exactly who God is. See, in our culture, Christmas has become a time of parties and eating and drinking and buying and selling and giving presents and celebrating. But the first Christmas wasn't like that at all. Let's try to think back to it. You have a young Jewish girl, probably in her mid-teens, who comes to her fiancé one day and says, "Guess what? I'm pregnant." Her fiancé knows that the child is not his, but when he asks the obvious question of who did it, she responds with, "God." The Bible doesn't record much of that conversation, but I think if I had been in Joseph's shoes, I'd be a little more skeptical about that story. In fact, we're told that he planned to break off his engagement to Mary as quietly as possible, and that is until an angel of the Lord came to him in a dream and told him that Mary had been telling him the truth the whole time. And still, when her belly started to get bigger, I expected that the rumors in town started to fly. In that culture, the law had harsh penalties for sex outside of marriage, that being death by stoning. Of course, it was often not enforced, but the law was on the books all the same. Sure, some people must have thought about it. Sure, Mary got those dirty looks as she walked through the streets on her way to synagogue on Saturdays. Ooh, a child out of wedlock, eh? Oh, she used to be such a good girl. And then came the news that everyone in Israel had to travel back to their ancestral hometown to be registered. Couldn't have come at a worse time, could it? Mary was in the last weeks of her pregnancy, and now she would have to make that hard journey south to Bethlehem. In our traditions, we've painted this story out of context of what it actually says in the scriptures. We picture Mary riding on a donkey the entire way to Bethlehem. We read the story in Luke, it doesn't actually say that she rode on the donkey. She may have walked. Either way, it was a treacherous journey for them to make. And then after they arrive in Bethlehem, we're told that there was no room in the inn. But if we look at the NIV version of Luke 2, the word they use is saying that there was no guest room available for them. If you think of it, Joseph came from the line of David. That means his family was in Bethlehem. Usually when you're traveling, what's the first thing you're going to do? If you've got family in the area, you'll call them up and see about staying with them before you check into a hotel. Makes sense that he would try to stay with relatives when he arrived. I expect, though, that the relatives had the same problem as the inns in that area with lack of space because there were so many people coming in for the census and just nowhere to stay. Where was the baby born? Traditionally, we picture this little stable. New Testament doesn't say that. Simply says she wrapped him with cloths and placed him in a manger. What we can be sure of is we can be sure of the circumstances, and they were uncomfortable. Not really the maternity ward at the local hospital, if they really had such a thing, or even a comfortable room in a relative's house. Perhaps they offered them the room downstairs. Downstairs was a room where they would bring animals in for the night. Maybe that's where they placed them. We just don't know. The baby's born. The shepherds hear. They come to see the baby. What happens next? We read in Matthew, we read about the Magi or the wise men coming to King Herod and telling him about this baby that's been born. And the king decides to send a death squad after the baby. See, Joseph's from that ancient royal family of David, and there are rumors that this baby is going to be the king God is sending to set his people free. Herod, who's a tyrant, doesn't like this revolutionary talk about freedom, and so he sends his soldiers to kill all of the children, the baby boys under 2 years old in Bethlehem, just to make sure that he gets rid of this threat to his throne. So Joseph and Mary and Jesus, they escape to Egypt. So now we have this chosen family of Mary, Joseph, and Jesus as refugees in a foreign land. A land where they have to learn a different language, get used to strange customs. Their religion makes them different from the people around them, and they have to get used to the strange looks and the whispers behind their backs. And it's not until Herod dies that they finally feel safe to return. This is the Christmas story. It's not a story of pure, unadulterated partying and cheerfulness. It's about ordinary people being called by God and going through all sorts of struggles and difficulties on the course of doing what God has asked of them. God comes among us in Jesus, but doesn't remove himself from the pain of ordinary human life. He plunges right into it. In fact, some 30 years later, we read that he experiences it to the full as the nails pierce his hands and his feet as he hangs on the cross alone, rejected by the very people he came to save, abandoned by his closest friends. So if you're here tonight and you're feeling rejected and abandoned and alone, if you feel grief or fear or pain of any kind tonight, Christmas story, it's for you. It's for me. It's for all of us. It tells us that God has come among us and shared our troubles so we can bring our pain to God in the confidence that God understands it from personal experience. Earlier in the service, we read, the Word became flesh, made his dwelling among us. In his paraphrase of the Bible called The Message, Eugene Peterson translates the verse like this: the Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. Your neighborhood, my neighborhood. The places where we live, where at any given time there are happy families and families that are breaking up. Newborn infants and people who are grieving relatives who died before their time. There are people sharing supper and people who just can't stop drinking no matter how hard they try. There are people with good jobs and a solid income, and there are people eating Kraft dinner not sure where that next rent check is coming from. That's the sort of neighborhood that Jesus feels at home in. So whatever pain you're struggling with tonight, I encourage you not to be afraid to bring it to God. I want to close with a story that I read that I found very inspiring. Corrie ten Boom was a little old Dutch lady who was sent to Ravensbrück concentration camp by the Nazis during the Second World War. Her crime was that she had helped the Jewish people get away from those who were hunting them. Corrie's whole family were involved in this, and so she and her sister Betsy went to Ravensbrück together. I don't need to describe for you the horrors or the experiences that were at that concentration camp, or the way that Betsy eventually died from the sufferings that she endured there. Corrie has written about all of this in her book, The Hiding Place. But what I want to close with are the words that Betsy spoke to Corrie just before she died. She said, "You must go all over the world and tell people what we have discovered here. You must tell them that there is no pit so deep that God is not deeper still. And they will believe you because you have been there." There is no pit so deep that God is not deeper still. It was true for Corrie and Betsy, and it is true for us tonight all the same. So let us take our pain and our struggle, turn to God, knowing that he hears our prayers, shares our sufferings, and that nothing can ever separate us from his love.